Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We would like to acknowledge that this podcast meeting is being held on Aboriginal land, the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and we would like to pay respect to their elders past, present, and emerging, and their multiple birth parents with children with disabilities.
In today's episode, we're speaking to Sue from Carers Victoria.
This podcast contains truth, laughter, and the occasional F word, so it's not really suitable for children.
Sometimes you just have to get your shits out. Shit, 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 shit. That's right, this is a language warning. Oh, shit.
Hello, Mandy.
Hello, Kate.
Well, I just have to say that Melbourne, we've had some nice days.
We have.
I don't know when this episode exactly is coming out, but I think there might be more nice days on the horizon.
I know. Today, overcast. Lightning yesterday, but yes. My legs have been out.
The dresses
have been out.
Sandals or whatever, thongs,
the
I don't
anti-chafing
know.
Anti-chafing short things.
Yeah, it's all back. Anyway, I'm very excited to talk to Sue.
Come on, Melbourne. Yes. So would you like to say hello and introduce yourself?
Sure. My name's Sue. I'm actually the chair of Carers Victoria, so I don't work in the organisation. And I met the lovely Mandy and Kate during Carers Week when they were guests for Carers Victoria.
Yeah, and we were chatting through the Zoom and we were like, Sue is a P.
We need to get her on.
We need to get her on. She's awesome.
So I am a P.
Thank you. So why don't we start with our questions?
Yes. So our first question is, do you have a favourite band or music or songs that either lift you up when you're feeling low or sort of pump you up when you're happy?
Yes, I think my favourite song, which my children tell me is now triggering for them, is Blinding Lights by Weekend. You know that one?
Yeah.
Yep.
There was a lot of dancing in the kitchen during lockdown to that. May even be a video of me that the kids accused me of having very 1980s dance style.
My kids.
I'll accept it. I'll take it. Guilty as charged.
Oh, yeah.
But apparently the reason that people, my generation, really like that song is apparently there are parts to it that do hark back to 80s songs.
I feel like he sounds like Michael Jackson a bit.
Yeah, maybe.
That's why I think when I hear those songs, I think this sounds like Michael Jackson.
Ah.
Yeah, so that's why I think I like it.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely one of my faves. Love it.
Interesting.
I saw a TikTok recently and it was a person younger than me and he was saying that he must have been like 28 or something and he went out with his co-workers who were like 19. And they said to him, oh, you look so old, you don't put your hands in the air when you dance.
Oh, what are you meant to do?
Oh, yes, you do. You put your hands in your air like you just don't care. We've been told to do this. So there are definitely 80s dance moves and we're all about them.
Oh, yeah. Goodness. Well, thank you. Awesome. Now, what about, did you win any awards at school?
I was a house captain and a school prefect at school. So, yes, I was a bit of a suck and wouldn't do chews. Didn't get into too much trouble. We won't talk about the time I got caught smoking as a prefect. We'll move on.
Did you get unprefected?
I didn't get unprefected because it was right at the end of the year, and it, I'm sure if they'd had the opportunity, they would have. But it was a bit late in the piece. I just had to suck it up. Do I smoke now? No. Have I smoked since?
Not no. Me, early year nine. It's that's a rebellious it. Every morning.
Yeah,
and that was it. I never in the afternoon.
I don't think you can smoke once you don't wear Impulse anymore.
Probably because that's
no. I think you've nailed it.
It was a fun time.
It was a fun
time. Impulse and Alpine, a heady combination.
Oh, man.
The memories are flying.
I know.
I can almost smell it.
My friend's mum only had Alpine. So, that when she was stealing them, that's what we had.
Yeah. And just you'd go to, I mean, my parents, very strict Christians, no smoking allowed. But you'd remember going to people's houses and they'd smoke inside?
Oh, yeah.
It was. Like, oh, yeah.
Just not even a thing.
No,
like,
I
now
know.
Now you try and tell the kids.
Oh, no.
Just go to someone's house for some, you know, honey joys and their mum's just smoking in the kitchen.
No.
Yeah. And in the car.
Yeah.
In the car. You'd have to wind down the window because your eyes would be streaming so much smoke being captive in the car with it all.
Yeah.
I know. And I was telling the kids when we used to go clubbing, yes, there were smoke machines, but you didn't really need them because the whole dance floor used to get like ashed on. Or...
Yes.
Anyway, this is a weird thing to us.
Although it did mask the smell of BO, Impulse, and sticky carpet, which I think is a bit sad that actually now you can smell those.
Yeah. Yes.
Because there's no smoke to cover it all up, other shocking smells.
No,
I
know.
You can just smell it from here.
You could just, imagine working there and going in the next day
having
to that stale. Anyway, our favourite question, why are you a pee?
Well, I'm a pee because I am the mother of four, and my older two children were both born with a very rare, like one in a million, degenerative genetic disorder called Niemann-Pick disease type C, where they were born very normal and they developed quite normally, and then they sort of slow down and plateau and then they decline. And unfortunately, my daughter, who was our second born, she was diagnosed first and she died when she was 14. Mm. And then our son was diagnosed, he was our oldest child, when he was, I think, 9, and he died when he was 19. Oh, it's a shocking disease.
So,
wish it on anyone. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So, well, let's go. So the second child was diagnosed first and then you have two more children. Mm.
And then I have two more. Yes.
Right. So what was her name?
Jazz.
Jazz.
Beautiful.
It's little Jazz. Yeah. Jasmine, but just Jazz.
Yeah.
And so Jasmine, typical pregnancy, typical birth, all of that.
Yeah. Look, and you ladies have probably been through this when they, or maybe you haven't, but when you start doing genetic investigation, honestly, the questions they ask you are you adopted? Are you related?
Wow.
Could you possibly be related? Oh. Are you, you know, very closed communities, kind of stuff? And eventually it was just one of those things, you know, very just unlucky that my partner and I are both carriers of that particular recessive gene.
Right.
And that, you know, there are families in America, we had obviously 2 out of 4, which is pretty poor odds given the incidence is obviously 1 in 4. If you're a blue eye, brown eye thing at school. But there are families in America that I've read that have had, you know, more than that in their family. So,
Do you think,
most unfortunate.
Because it doesn't get diagnosed till later, people aren't even aware that it's a thing in their family.
Oh, I think most people don't need to be aware that it's a thing, to be honest, because it is so rare.
No, I mean in the families that have it.
Well, you know, there could be families that are carriers that have never had an actual, you know, we could have had 4 kids and none of them might have actually had it. And so it could have just been that, you know, we didn't know either and we've passed it on. And, in fact, you know, they do say, you know, who do the children look like? And I think we're just trying to guess, who of our parents?
Yes.
How has that come down the line? Who gave it to us and who back there? So
what was the incidence that made you get her tested or what was starting to happen for Jasmine?
Well, Jazz was diagnosed when she, not long after birth. So she had a very significant symptom at birth, which was she had a liver that was about 10 times bigger than normal.
Right.
Which is huge.
Baby. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, they went, oh, that's not right. And so they whipped her over to the Royal Children's Hospital here in Melbourne, which was quite funny because she was in the PICU, you know, the prenatal, whatever it is, ICU. Yeah. Yeah, and she was a big girl.
Yes, she was. To be with all
them. They look big, don't they?
Tiny little babies, and she was so, you know, normal and regular, and she was feeding and putting on weight and everything else. And then we had to go back to the hospital on a number of occasions because they just couldn't work it out. And eventually she was diagnosed. They gave her a liver biopsy at 3 months and had said, we think it could be genetic. And then they diagnosed her as having Niemann-Pick disease, type C. There are other types, but
what happened?
Yeah, what happened? Did the carpet just fall away from under you? Like,
Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, it's not good news when they quietly invite you to come into the hospital for an appointment and they usher you in and everyone's been terribly quiet.
Yes.
You know it's not good news. In fact, some years ago now, but I did have breast cancer, which was not a big deal in the overall scheme of things. And if anyone else has
said cancer. Said only as a pea mother.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not dissing anyone else's
journey.
To be honest, mine was really just an inconvenience, but I did have to have surgery and radiation. But it was quite funny because I got ushered into a small quiet room.
Oh, gosh. So
I've been here.
This and they trigger.
Look, it is bad news. You have got cancer. I've gone, yeah, right. Well, I was expecting that because no one's ever invited me into a room like this and gone, good news, you're free.
Yeah, you're going on a holiday.
Yeah, you won $50 million.
And then they said, oh, look, you may have to have a mastectomy and a reconstruction, which I didn't. And I said, oh, great, can I have a tummy tuck at the same time? I think he thought I was joking. And he went, oh, well, look, one thing at a time. And I went, no, I'm really serious. If I'm having that.
While I'm here.
Yes. Fix it all. I didn't get the tummy tuck. I didn't get any.
Oh, wow.
So it wasn't when they said, oh, can you come in and have an appointment, honestly, and I'm sure you ladies know this too, that your intuition, before I even got there, I thought this can't be good. It's going to be bad. And it was really bad. It was worse than I even imagined.
I couldn't imagine that bad.
Yeah, because other than telling us she had Niemann-Pick, which, of course, I'd never heard of, they said she probably won't be 10 and she definitely won't be 20.
Oh,
so we went, oh, that's not good. And then I said, I'm supposed to be going back to work because, you know, 2 weeks from when I was going back to work, we got that news because she would have been 3 months old, I think, or something. I said, I'm supposed to go back to work. And they said, look, the hospital gave me very good advice, and I would certainly share this with any other peas. They said, you just do what you were going to do, go back to work, and, you know, you don't have to tell work, you don't have to tell people. Mm. And I think in my experience, and, you know, maybe this is something that you've experienced as well, I don't know, it's different for everyone, but coming to terms with things yourself before telling other people or having everyone asking you questions when you haven't quite put your finger on it yourself or come to understand what it is, I think is really difficult. And so we told a few people and then word started to get out. Yeah. And the worst thing, now tell me that this hasn't happened to you. Maybe we talked about this in the when we last met, is when people come up to you at, you know, aisle 3 of the supermarket and lay a hand gently on your forearm and go, how are the children?
Yes, the head tilt.
Seriously?
Yes.
Please don't.
No, please don't.
Yeah.
Please.
No, not helpful.
No, not helpful.
No, because that makes you not want to go out on those days and then think, I don't want to have to come up against that.
Mm.
Well, it's just so unexpected and you do sometimes, I think, feel somewhat blindsided. And, you know, particularly if you have asked people not to share your news.
Yes.
Or ready to share your news.
Yes.
Unfortunately, that doesn't always happen, does it?
No, and I think it is a real eye-opener for me. It's happened to me 2 or 3 times in my life when something sort of big's happened and I've gone, I confided in you because I loved you, but it was gossip to you.
Yeah.
And it's like a horrible lightning bolt of, oh, okay. And I think you just draw your circle in a little bit closer, you know. But yeah. It is still, you know, we shouldn't have to say this, but if someone tells you something and says, don't tell anyone yet.
Don't tell anyone yet.
I think it's just, look, I'm probably slightly more forgiving. Mm. I think sometimes people were concerned or they felt that, you know, maybe we needed more support or I don't know really what people's motivations are. But I have had people since then say that they had told other people and then something had happened to them and then they go, now I understand.
Yes.
And as I keep saying, it's not about not ever telling anybody. I really think that you need to allow people the space to come to terms themselves with what's going on before having to deal with other people in aisle three of the supermarket with the gentle hand to the forearm. Yes.
And I think sometimes, I mean, I don't know, I haven't have lived experience of what you've had, but sometimes you have to give the people around you strength. Because they sort of, it's like a weird thing where they need reassurance that everything's going to be okay or that everyone's going to cope. But you're not ready to give that out yet because you don't have it yourself. And so, yeah it's like a weird, who would it be?
I totally, totally agree with that, Kate, because even just recently another incident, another friend's son unfortunately passed away. And we were both saying how often when people are trying to console you, they can't hold themselves together and you end up trying to console them. It is just, it's quite weird. So I think if you're not ready to be in that space with a person who's grieving, and I'm not necessarily even saying about death, it could be just a bad diagnosis or something that's gone on. If you're not feeling strong enough to be in that space and just hold that space to allow them to go through and say what they need to, then maybe just give it some time.
Yeah.
Because really, honestly, it is frustrating when you're in the depths of your own despair and you find yourself going, oh, well, it'll be okay.
Totally.
I know.
Madness, actually.
It is madness.
Yeah.
Total madness.
What about then your son? What was your son's name?
George.
George.
Oh, George, what a cute name.
George.
And then, so obviously he was older than Jazz.
That's right.
Yeah. And so then what happened? What did the doctor say we need to test him or how did that?
Again, I think we talked about professionals. We had a very strange experience because George started to show signs of, you know, tremors and things. And I went, oh, that's not good. So we actually made an appointment and we went to the hospital and spoke to one of the genetics doctors and he said, well, you know, he could have it, but what are you going to do? We can't do anything about it anyway.
But what are you going to do?
And he said, what are you going to do? Because you can't do anything about it anyway. It's untreatable, which is true.
But
he said, and it's not like you're going to have another baby. Yeah, well, don't say that. I went and had another baby.
Me when I'm breathing.
He goes, how old are you? And I don't know, at the time maybe I was 39 or something. Anyway, I had another one when I was 41. He goes, well, it's not like you're going to have any more kids after he
so
asked us how
many assumptions are. And wrong things.
Jeepers.
So anyway, we had another one. He said, yeah, maybe you shouldn't, there's no point. And to be honest, at the time, my partner and I felt absolute relief. We thought, oh, thank God we don't have to go through this again.
Yes, yeah.
Anyway, then I had an appointment to see the paediatrician. I don't know, you ladies would have the same thing. There's the paediatrician, the neurologist, the neuropsychologist. Yeah.
All of them.
On and on it goes. The gastroenterologist. Yeah. We had the entire suite.
I bet you did.
So anyway, I had an appointment, I think, with one of the paediatricians or maybe it was the gastroenterologist. And I said, oh, look, we were terribly worried about George and we thought we'd have him tested. And we went and saw the geneticists and they said, oh, no, don't bother. And honestly, he couldn't keep his face arranged.
Oh, yeah.
So he said, no, I think you should have him tested. So he was tested, and honestly, by that point, we were so sure that he had it. In fact, they forgot to give us the results. And then I rang him and I went, I think I rang the neurologist, and I said, we haven't had the results. And he went, oh, God, really? Yeah. I said, look, honestly, do not invite me into a dark
room. No. We've been there.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, are you happy for me to tell you over the phone? And I said, I think we already know.
Oh, Sue.
And so how old was he? Sorry, 9.
When he was diagnosed, I think he was 9, and he died when he was 19. Oh,
and so did he have an understanding?
Yeah, unfortunately. Mm. But, you know, I mean, I used to just say to the kids, you know, which I have often said to other people, not that I feel that I'm ever in a position to give anyone else advice, but my own way of dealing with things was, let's worry about what we can do something about and let's not worry about the rest.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what we did. Yeah, I think you've just got to make the most of whatever you've got, really, don't you?
Were they in school, mainstream schools?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, they went to the local primary school because, well, George was already at the local primary school. And then eventually Jazz was the first one to go to a specialist school.
Yeah.
And I felt really uncomfortable about that, I won't lie. I was just going, oh, special school. You know, she's graded, but her condition was, you know, deteriorating and stuff. And I thought, oh. Anyway, I looked at some special schools and, gee, that's a hard, I don't know.
My daughter's at a specialist school,
Gee, it's, I know they don't call them special schools anymore.
Specialist.
Yeah, specialist schools, thank you. It was so difficult because I went and looked at schools and they'd go, oh, no, this is a school for kids with, you know, low IQ. Yeah. We can't have kids with physical disability. Yeah. But, well, I don't even know why we're here. How did we end up here? That no one can help you or guide you in that. Yes. It's just such a hit and miss. I was very fortunate that one of the teachers from the local primary school came with me and she said, oh, I'll come and look at these schools with you. Anyway, we ended up with only two options, really. Yes. And then once she started there, as much as I – oh, she sort of started going 3 days to special school, specialist at school and 2 days at the local primary. And then quickly I realised how great specialist school is. Yes. It's fantastic. Like the people who work there were brilliant. The parents were great. The kids were good. Jazz really loved it. She had, you know, friends there. And so that turned out to be actually a really good choice. Yeah. And same with George. George went there too for his last 2 years of school and really enjoyed it. And because everything's there, they've got the PTs. They've got the physios.
That's right.
You know, the one-stop shop.
All of that stuff makes a huge difference.
Doesn't it? It was just really relief because also I think finding your tribe a little bit. I was a bit in the wilderness by myself.
Of course you would have been.
In the local school. And so once I got there and all the staff are like, nah, that's fine. We look after that.
Yeah.
Really? I felt that too. Didn't the principal say, well, we're going to take over now?
She just said, you must be so tired and we're going to help you now. And I was just like, what?
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
What a beautiful thing to say to anyone.
I know, because I was just.
You were tired.
I am tired. I've been trying to keep her. I'm still tired. But, you know, I'll never forget that moment.
No, it is quite exhausting.
I'm assuming this is pre-NDIS.
Oh, yeah, well, pre-NDIS. But can I share my NDIS? Pre-NDIS stories.
Yes.
I'm sure you'll appreciate this. So at the school where my kids were, they were doing consultations NDIS. So they had some person come along and I was sitting next to a dad who was also a teacher at the school who had a child there. And they started off by saying, look, this new thing that's coming out, the NDIS, the first thing we'll be asking you is, what are your hopes and dreams for your children's future? Took I leaned over to him and said, a cure? And he leaned back to me and went, a miracle. I said, I'm not sure they're going to be able to deliver those.
That's the best humour together.
Yes.
Can the NDIS provide a cure for Niemann-Pick disease type C? Not so far.
Which category does that come under?
Yes, what bloody line item is that? None. Yes.
Or, you know, a cure, or in his case, because his child didn't have a disease, I can't quite remember what their condition was. He said he just needed a miracle.
Yes. Oh, That's what you've remembered, the camaraderie, the friendship, all that. And you can laugh, and your other friends would be like, we could never laugh about that.
Yeah.
That's why you need peace. No. Yeah.
No. No one else can say that.
No.
We thought it was terribly funny. But yes.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It was pre-NDIS.
Yeah. Mm. So were you, like, did your local council come in and give you a respite, or how did all that work? Did you get any money?
Not much, really. Look, I have to also confess I was in the very fortunate position that I was still working full-time as an executive. Mm. And we, if we were going out or something, we'd like to go out, we'd just get babysitters.
Yeah.
I was a bit worried about getting someone from the council. I'd heard some horrendous stories from some people. But anyway, look, eventually it got to the point I thought, look, I'm going to try the council thing. And a bit like specialist school, we got the carer from heaven. Yes. We had a couple of them, but one in particular was absolutely fantastic. So the school disco, I'm not going to say where I live or which council.
No, that's fine. Of course.
But anyway, we had this woman, and the school disco was on, and George wanted to go, of course, but we used to always take him. And honestly, when you're 17, do you really want your parents loitering around at the school disco?
No.
So anyway, this particular worker said, look, I'll take him. I don't think it was actually quite in the rules. But anyway, so she turned up and she was going to take him to the disco, which he was very excited about. And then we realised she couldn't fit his wheelchair in her car.
Oh.
So we were like, oh, that's all a bit disappointing. She goes, okay, outside the rules, I'm going to drive your van and take that. You take my car.
Right.
Dinner.
Good.
They're the good people.
I think we may have broken quite a lot of rules, but honestly, he had the best night.
Yes.
Without his parents.
And you're supposed to break rules at 17.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we had another lady, I think, was organised through maybe the children's hospital, because we had overnight respite only after Jazz was palliative.
Yeah, I was about to ask. Was that through very special kids or anything, or what?
Not through very special kids, just through the hospital. Mm. And then they referred me to, can't remember, it's all a bit of a blur, but they referred me somewhere and they went, oh, my God, because Sass, by that point, I had to resuscitate her during the night before the ambulance. She was on a CPAP machine. Yes. She had suctioned and turned every 2 hours and whatever. And they went, what, and then you go to work? Yeah. And I went, well, I drink a lot of coffee.
Yes, Sue.
But anyway, so.
Oh, women are amazing.
I know, you are amazing.
Oh, no, look, I'm sure,
I know there are. We can always say there are people that do it tougher or harder, but I just want to say, incredible.
Yeah.
You went to work, you kept your career going, and you got up at night and resuscitated your beautiful daughter. I just love women. Yeah. I just think they're amazing.
Mm. Well, it did happen, but some amazing, and again, I'm not entirely sure of your circumstances, but some amazing paramedics. Mm. Like, I would call the ambulance sometimes. We were on the frequent flyer program.
Yeah.
I'd call the ambulance and they'd come in and, she would have, was breathing. Mm. And they said, look, technically we're supposed to take you to hospital. I said, we are not going back to hospital. Like, we'd spent so much time in hospital.
Yes, of course.
Going back. Right now she seems to be fine. Mm. And these women, they were women, the paramedics, one of them probably more my vintage, said, look, we're supposed to take you, but we won't, but just know, because they were actually literally driving past our street when I rang, and so they were in it. And she said, but if you need anything else, just give us a call, so we'll just quietly leave. Thank you.
Yes, common sense.
Yeah.
There were some great paramedics, absolutely, that we had the pleasure of seeing.
Yeah.
Frequently.
Once you got into palliative care, did that feel like there was more support?
Yeah. And you know, the thing that sucks about that, Mandy, I felt, is that a lot of people do need support, and it's all very well when they step up to the line when you've got, a deadline, like there's an end point. So once Jazz had been classified as palliative, then, yeah, we had a lot more help.
Yeah, you think,
because they thought, well, this isn't going to keep going. Whereas before that, when
it's exhausting.
Don't you think that system is a bit? Maybe NDIS and stuff now is very different.
It is.
Yeah,
you'd be living a different life.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You had your other two kids.
Yes.
How old were they? Ages when Jazz died.
Sass was 3 and Elle was 10.
Right.
Wow.
10 and 3. Yeah.
Wow.
So quite small. We did travel though with all of them. We were like a traveling intensive care unit.
That's amazing.
And it is amazing. If anyone out there, like, you know, I just thought, look, seriously, we're just going to keep going and do whatever we're going. I thought, I'm not going to let this get in the way. So, like, we were travelling overseas and whatever. But, you know, when you go through customs and you're not supposed to have liquids of more than,
of course,
100 mils or whatever it is. I tell you what, when you've got, you know, all the epilepsy medication and form tube fed, so we had all that equipment, incontinent, we had everything. I remember my partner was going through customs and they said, oh, can you just open your carry-on, which he did, and he flicked open the lid and it was full of all this medical stuff, and because we couldn't, obviously, we had to take it with us on the plane in case the luggage got lost. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the guy goes, just close the bag and move through.
We saw nothing. Yeah. There's nothing
and
to see.
People were just unbelievably accommodating. So,
Where did you take them?
We went to where did we take them? Oh, Egypt, Cambodia, Vietnam.
No, okay.
lots and lots of places. But we also used to camp. And in fact, when Jazz was palliative, I said, oh, we're going camping. And they go, oh, you're not. And I go, yeah, I am, because I'm not going to let this. Jazz likes camping.
Yes, that's right. Good for
her. Went up to Bright, set up the tent, had to run a leak. I don't know what happened. I thought I'd booked a powered site. Difficult when you've got an oxygen extractor in a tent and you don't have power. I had to suction her and turn her every 2 hours. So I went down to the office and said, small problem. I need an oxygen extractor to plug in. And the guy goes, yeah, just run a lead from the toilet block.
Such an Australian.
When waking people up in the middle of the night. Anyway, I just thought, maybe I had a cylinder as well, but I definitely needed the extractor. And then I thought, what if I run out? Or I can't get that power lead. So anyway, the hospital at Bright, should anyone be interested, is right behind the camping ground.
Yes.
So I just trotted up there and there was a lovely nurse on duty, and I introduced myself and I said, look, we're camping there. Our daughter's 14. She's palliative. In fact, I think she was just before she was 14. If we run out of oxygen, do you have much on standby? She said, oh, yes. If you need anything, you just pop straight on up here. Trotted back down. But in the middle of the night, I don't know whether your campers, it's deadly quiet.
Yes.
And then I have to start up the suction with it.
Of course.
But anyway, it was fine. No one complained.
No.
And in fact, do you know, when I was showering her, because I'm trying to think, Sass must have been about 3 or 2 or something at that point. So I'm in the women's change room with all of these kids and, you know, the toddler, the one who can't stand up or talk, who's palliative and tube fed. And I'm trying to get her, I had to get a camping chair to put in the shower to actually shower her, because under camping ground, you don't want to Anyway, so I've got her in a camping chair, give her a shower, get out. Honestly, the women who just said, here, let me help you.
Yes.
Let me, here, what can I do to help? Do you want me to hold her while you put her clothes on? Can I, you know, what can I do? Don't you love that?
Yes. Don't you see sometimes in the darkest time in your life the very best in people?
Oh, we took the kids to Broome when we had four of them, and we went out on a pearl lugger, you know, where there's a net.
Wow.
Big wooden boat that they used for pearling. So we're out off Broome. The entire boat was crewed by women. So it's an old-fashioned sort of sailing boat. And I said, I really want to get the kids into the net, you know, at the front of the boat. And the captain's got Sass, who at that point I think was only maybe one. I'm going, don't you drop my baby. She's over the end of the boat. She did have a life jacket on, you know, the boat's spinning at speed. But then I had to get all, you know, we were trying to get the kids back onto the boat. And the people who stepped up were women in their 50s who I think must do yoga because they were incredibly strong and capable. And they're like, here, pass me that kid. No, there's two of us here. We'll take that one.
Yeah, it's the greatest.
Unbelievably. Yeah, helpful and accommodating.
Oh, but women in their 50s, because I'm 51.
Women in their 50s.
Just brilliant.
Yeah, we know now. We don't care. Absolutely. And we know what to do.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
No, it is good. It is good.
You had adventures. I'm sure you still
do. Oh, yeah, we did.
Yeah.
We did have adventures and, you know, they had a you know, as great as we could make it, I suppose.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
Oh, so.
But, yeah, camping. Oxygen extractors. And in fact, even when we left the hospital, because Jazz was, she had a peg and was tube fed, you know, you have to hang that, maybe you have this, but you have to hang the bag by their tummy. And as we're leaving, one of the nurses, again, luckily people might get into trouble. He said, here, take one of these, and gave me one of the hospital poles. It was one of the old ones that was downstairs somewhere. He goes, why don't you just take that? I said, that would be so
brilliant.
Cool. Yeah.
So there we are in our tent with a pole out the front.
Good.
With the formula in it.
Yes.
To do the feeding. It was fantastic. It was very kind of them. I did, by the way, I hastily add, after Jazz died, I did return everything to the hospital.
That's okay. Oh, what can you tell us a little bit about the time when she died? What was that like?
Oh, look, we were lucky she was at home. We were at home. You know, she'd slipped into a coma. We knew that, you know, she wasn't coming back from that. So that was all fairly straightforward. And I do believe you can have, you know, a good death, and that was a death. So, yeah, that was fine.
And did you have family and friends?
Of course it wasn't fine. It was awful. But
Of course. Oh, terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, did you have family and friends? Like, was your mum around or your sister or all? Like, was there people?
No, I don't have any sisters. My parents were here because I had said, you know, this is not going well. She's not going to be here long. But,
I just think.
So that was all fairly, as I said, like it wasn't unexpected but still horrendous.
Oh. Then that I have to keep going, get up. There's other three children that need me. Got to keep going.
Yeah, well, that's quite true. And as I said, we returned everything after Jazz died. And then about a week later, George's wheelchair turned up.
Of course it did.
But that's bad timing. So, then his decline sort of happened fairly well. He died 3.5 years after Jazz.
My gosh.
Oh, sorry if I left you speechless. We were talking about some dunking people.
Oh, that's okay. Like it's a big story.
Yeah, it is a big story.
Well, yeah, it is. It is. And do you know the worst thing? I'm sure, it's not the worst thing. There are so many bad parts to this. But I'm sure you have the same issue. So my business partner, through a connection of somebody, happened to know someone who lived down the street from me. And she said, oh, you must know my business partner, Sue. And the woman sort of looked reflective for a while and she said, is that the woman whose children died?
Oh,
oh my God, I'm now the woman whose children
died.
side. So I'm sure you ladies too, your circles are known as the women who.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it won't be that the women who've got the fabulous podcast make the first thing.
Oh, no, no, no. There's many things people could say about
things.
Me.
And they do, but we just don't know.
maybe just as well.
Yeah, I don't think when you said we were speechless, I think I was thinking how do you do that grief when you're already in that grief?
Yeah, that's what
what I was like trying to think. And I know you get no fucking choice, so it's a stupid thing for me to have even thought.
Mm-hmm.
But like you've already lost your beautiful daughter and then you have to back it up and do it again.
Yeah. Like, oh, well, you just do. When people say, which, you know, I'm sure you've had this as well, oh, you're such an inspiration.
Oh, no.
Look, I did not put my hand up.
No.
Not shoot at skyways and go, please, choose me.
No, you did not.
Of course you did not.
No, there's...
You know, and then, you know, some people, which I'm sure may have been said to you, you're only given what you can handle.
Oh, no, that's against the law.
Yeah.
Because turns out nobody can really cope with anything, but you just keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's all just perspective really, isn't it? And as you say, you've just got to keep going. There's no choice in it,
there
really.
There is no choice. And it's just a weird thing, and I think that I've definitely learned through having, you know, lots of different things in my life, but having the twins, things that I just would never say anymore. Mm. But I definitely would have said them, you know. Like,
oh, for sure.
Yeah, and now I'm like,
What kind of things do you think that you...
Well, I think I used to definitely...
To ask some questions?
Yeah, you're allowed, of course.
I think that I definitely would have been like, we've done a whole episode on people saying, I don't want a boy or a girl, I just want a healthy baby. And I definitely said that. Those words definitely came out of my mouth. And now as a person whose children are, well, I suppose if you want, they're healthy, as in they don't have a complex medical condition. But I think what that statement means, I don't want a child with any additional needs or disabilities. I think, oh, God, what a horrible thing to say. Like, am I a perfect human? No. But so, and I think also things about, I think saying to people, I don't have the words for that, even though I know I've said it, is a terrible thing to say, because I think you should just sit and listen to them and then just say something, because I think that's a, yeah, I've had people say it to me recently. Oh, well, I haven't got the word. I don't know what to say. There are no words. I'm like, well, there are words, actually. I don't know if they're good or bad. I don't mind if you fuck it up, but some words.
It's so hard, isn't it? I think, and I guess I always try to think that regardless of what people say, they don't intentionally say it's well meant. But unfortunately, yeah. In fact, I had another idea to write a book, which I'll probably never do. But
I hope you do.
I wanted to write a book called "Did You Think About That Before You Said It?"
Yes, that's an excellent title.
That's a great title.
Yes.
I've got lots of friends. I keep saying to them, you can all contribute a chapter.
Yes.
It might just be a page.
Yes.
Did you actually think that through? Did it go through your mind before it popped out your mouth?
I remember saying something horrendous to a friend of mine, and I'll never get over it, and I've since apologised, but I will never forget that I said it. So that's why we always say we're always someone's rectum. So when we say people are rectums on our podcast, it's the people that say those stupid things. But yeah, we are that too.
Of course we are. Yeah.
Oh, look, I'm sure, but, you know, sometimes just a little moment of... I think my least favourite of those ones is when it became fairly common knowledge that our children were terminal, that people would say to me, like, I don't know why you would say this to me. Oh, when I heard, I went home and I gave my kids a hug.
Well, Kate and I just recoiled. That is just awful.
Yeah. So consoling for me. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm glad you're happy with
me. Yeah, I remember at school and people were like, oh, I want my children to be friends with your children so they can learn to be good people. And I was like, we're not here for your child to grow.
No.
Correct.
I was just like.
That's another great one. Oh, we've learned so much from your
children.
Good on you.
I'm not just kidding, they didn't learn anything from you. No,
but anyway.
Nothing from you.
Thanks. Not to be an asshole.
Yeah.
I know.
Or make no give. No, but yeah, some people do say some things. But as I said, you could do your head in.
Yeah.
So I'd try to think that it was when people said things that I just went, really?
And I think that's why I think back to, I shudder at things that I've said in my life.
Definitely.
Because
I'm sure I've said some terrible things.
That's right. And until you have a lived experience or a very close experience of something, you can't understand. Like I think the greatest things that has ever happened to me and hopefully I've done for other people is to then apologize, like Mandy did, to go, I've thought about what I said and that was hurtful. I didn't really think about it. And then you can have a whole conversation. And I agree. I think 90% of people are good and they just want to make you feel supported and seen, and they don't know how to do it.
Yeah, I agree. And you've got to, I mean, I always think that for many people too, I think apologising is absolutely the right thing
so
to
powerful.
Do. But it is powerful. But for many people, I also appreciate that the embarrassment and the shame, I mean, shame is such a strong driver for people. But they just can't do it.
That's
which
right.
Case, look, I'm sure you have reflected on that.
Yeah.
In the middle of the night when you've woken up and thought, God, I can't believe I said that.
Yeah. 10 years later, I'm still thinking about it at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Totally.
Yeah.
Correct.
About we've interviewed a few peas whose children have died, and then there's been this, who am I afterwards? Was that who were you after George after George's death? Then this has all just happened. My children have died. I was in that world. I'm not in that world anymore.
Look, I appreciate because I'm just trying to think how old I was. Maybe I was 50-ish, 52 or something. Oh, hang on. No, I can't. No. It was before I was 50. Mm. And I still had two other children. So,
You're in that world.
Yeah, and I still was working full time. And when George died, I was running my own business with a business partner. So we were pretty busy. I think I didn't, although I understand what you're saying because at carers, that is, I acknowledge that for many carers, that's a huge, huge transition. And it's a very difficult transition if your, you know, day-to-day life has been around caring for somebody else, then when that journey ends, then it is incredibly difficult to go, well, what is my purpose anymore? Who am I and what do I do? I guess for me, my circumstances were, as I said, I still had two other children. I was still working full-time, et cetera. So, it was, you know, obviously not pleasant, but, you know, I had plenty of other things to
keep
me busy. Yeah.
And when did you get involved with Carers Victoria? Or were you
just after George died. George died in 2012, and I think I joined Carers maybe 2013 or 14. I'd have to check my own LinkedIn.
Yeah.
But I'm scared of all the spam emails I'm going to get if I go in there.
I think it's 2014. My I don't know about I don't know whether this was because things are kind of blurry or whether I'm just crap at chronology. I often find it's really hard to remember the sequence of things or what year something happened. But anyway, so my business partner and I had a meeting with someone from Carers Victoria, actually. Because they knew each other, my business partner and this guy from Carers Vic, and they were looking for some help with some PR and awareness raising. And we were having a coffee, and I don't know how it even came up, but he said, oh, we're looking for a director who's got marketing experience. And Mandy, my business partner, went, oh, Sue's just, I was on a previous board, I was looking for more board work, etc. And so I joined the board and I had caring experience. So
yes.
I think it was 2014. I could have to check.
Wow.
Something like that, about 10 years. I think I've
How
been.
Did that feel?
What, to join the board?
Yeah. Of Carers Vic specifically.
Yeah, look, it was good. I think it just highlighted to me that I hadn't heard of Carers before that, and I hadn't really thought of myself as a carer.
Yes.
That is a monumental problem
yes.
For all carers, because One of the somebody who worked at carers years later said to me that her theory, which I had spent a long time thinking about, but I think she nailed it, was that to be called a carer somehow diminishes from your primary relationship, which in our the three of our cases is being a mother. So, you know, when you rock up to the hospital and they go, are you the carer? You go, care on their mother. To those children. So, but I think it is important to recognise that as a carer, like you're a mother first and foremost, there's no doubt, but you are also a carer because you're not running the usual course of just being a mother. And so I shouldn't say just being a mother.
No, we know what you mean. And there's that, I don't know when that moment happens. I think for me it was through adolescence thinking, okay, this is not what other, and I have a twin, she's shooting off on this trajectory and we're on this trajectory and this crossover to being a carer. But I don't ever introduce myself as that. But
No. And
but you're right. It's just I don't know how to align them together. I don't know if it it's more when your children are older. I don't know.
I think you actually make a good point, Mandy, because I think when they're small, even when they've got disabilities, as Jazz did, you know, when they're in a stroller and, doesn't really.
You're like all sort of doing the same thing.
It's not as apparent.
Yes.
To everybody else. But I also have a theory that that generally in our minds as people, humans, we're overcoming a lot of prejudice and disability does make people feel uncomfortable because they don't want to say the wrong thing. They don't want to do the wrong thing. I think there's avoidance sometimes about disability. There's a reluctance to engage because it makes people feel uncomfortable. And that's something that I think as a society we're just going to have to get over. For a lot of, you know, it's not just disability. It's, you know, things like people who are homeless or sometimes it's even people from different cultures. People are just so, you know, uncomfortable with the unfamiliar. And it's very innate, I think, in humans and we have to work very hard to overcome it and we need to work a bit harder.
What changes have you seen in carers, Vic, over your time?
So much because when I first joined, as I said, that was before NDIS. There's been so much government reform, not just in disability, but also in aged care, in mental health. There's been massive government reforms, and the government have rearranged the way that things have been funded several times. Sometimes more successfully than others. There's programs that, you know, are trialled. Sometimes they work and sometimes they just peter out. So, look, I think there's absolutely an emphasis on trying to make social services work and to be an inclusive community. But we've still got a long, long way to go, I think, anyway. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I have actually never reached out for support from carers, Vic, and I think that's something that I probably will do, but I think that's come from that I'm not sure if I am a carer because I'm a mum and I don't know.
Oh, no. Look,
to all I'm saying that because if other people are thinking that, that's why I'm saying that, yeah.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, and I didn't. I remember ringing somewhere or, you know, I got referred somewhere and someone rang me and they said, yeah, what help do you need? It's like, well, I don't know. What have you got?
Hit me with it all.
I know, but it's true. Some carers, you know what it's like when you become so embedded in it and you're living it and it's your day to day, it's very hard to lift your head up and go, actually, maybe I could do with some help there. I would encourage all your peers to please log on to the Carers Victoria, just Google Carers Victoria and join, sign up, become a member. It costs nothing. The reason it's so important that we have more members is because we do a lot of advocacy to government and we need to actually, you know, we need carers to be heard and understood and we need to be representing more. I mean, Victoria has over 700,000 carers.
Of course.
Unpaid carers, which is a lot. But we need to be more connected with those people. And we want to be able to survey people, and we want to hear from carers to say what they are struggling with so we can advocate on their behalf. So if people could do that, that would be extremely helpful. Even if you choose not to engage, or you don't want to be part of surveys or whatever, you don't have to do that. But we just need your voice. We need you to add your voice to the cause. But the other thing we found really helpful is connecting carers, which I guess is some of what you do as well. But, you know, there are ways, you know, there are support groups. And support groups, you know, God, they get a bad rap, don't they?
They do, actually.
People go, oh, my God, that's people who are falling over. Not necessarily. No. It's often just women who are managing incredibly well.
Yes.
Not all. There's actually some men's groups as well that are just men. It's often people who are managing incredibly well, but to be able to meet with people in similar circumstances and just, you know, people just say the smallest thing and you go, oh, my God, that's a great idea.
Yes. We had
so it's more that. It's not like, you know, cups of tea and sympathy.
No, it's camaraderie. No.
Yeah.
And Correct.
I think it's the same with anything in life, you know, like if you really love, I don't know, basketball, and then you start going and then you find you meet someone there and then you get involved, and like it's just the same. Like we've got this common interest. We wouldn't really be friends if we didn't have this thing. And then it's every time I meet someone who, you know, I know you sit next to them on a plane or whatever, and you're like, you find things in common with people really quickly.
Absolutely. And
yeah, I think, yeah, support groups are incredibly important.
But it just, you know, maybe it's the term support.
Yeah, group. It needs a different.
You're like you're wobbly.
Yeah,
like, you know, if someone goes, I'm going to a support group, there's already a suggestion that you're wobbly. Whereas in fact, you might be the pillar of strength that needs.
So that's true.
Get on to that.
But I think sometimes that's where my worry is too. And I think I can't take anybody else's story on today.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course.
And you think, I'm full. I see someone coming and I'm like, I'm full. I can't, you know?
Yeah.
So I think there's those times where I think I can't be that person for other people at this point in time. But then there's other times there's where I am.
Yeah, that's right.
But I think we're all fluid like that. Yeah. I mean, times that, you know, we're all up for, you know, providing that support and being strong. And there are times where it's like, you know, seriously, not today. Yeah. Today, not your day.
Yeah.
That's all right.
But there's a real strength in knowing that.
There is a strength in knowing that.
And I think
exactly. Please
that's a gift of being older.
Yeah, of getting better at it.
And not having to be everything all the time.
Yeah.
And showing other people. Yeah. You don't have to be everything all the time either.
Yeah.
Some days. Yes, some days. No, some hours. Yes, some hours. No.
Yeah,
absolutely.
What are your like dreams for Carers Vic? Or do you on the board? What does that mean? What do you? Is it strategic stuff?
It is strategic. It's quite right, Mandy. It's very strategic. So, my goals for Carers Vic, number one, at the heart of everything, is driving membership. We really do. And if you know somebody, if you know people who know people, please promote it. Put it on your Facebook page. We really need, as I said, a lot more people signed up to be part of the organisation, because then that will allow us to really, I use the term to democratise the organisation. So we really understand in real time what carers are going through, what they need, whether they're getting the support, what support they're not getting, where the gaps are, etc. And then use that evidence to advocate to the government, as I was saying, but also build up a much clearer picture. Like there's such a diverse cohort, carers. They really are. And I think I do... Yeah, so it would be great if we had much more representation, because they're from every nook and cranny.
Yeah, of course.
And we want to know who those people are. We want to connect them. I mean, the vision is that we have an Australia that supports, recognises and values carers.
And gives us super.
You know, the amount of work carers, if everyone in Australia who was a carer said, I'm not doing this anymore.
Oh, imagine.
Over to you, the government, it would cost well in excess of $72 billion a year.
Wow.
unpaid care.
Yes.
It's even more now. And the problem is that the need for informal unpaid care is going up.
Yes.
And the propensity to care is going down.
Yes.
Basically because, you know, people travel, they move into state, they've got busy jobs, they're living overseas.
The cost of living, it's so expensive to live. Mm. So how can you be a full-time carer or a part-time carer because you can't then put food on the table? Like, it's so hard now.
Yeah, well, you can access, I mean, there are payments for carers, the carer payment, but it's pretty lean. And as you know, depending on, you know, the type of person or the condition of the person that you're caring for, there's often additional expenses in caring for people. They've done some research, and I wish I knew the numbers off the top of my head, but of course I don't. But the amount of lost income that it has over their lifetime, and the impact goes on because then they don't have enough super.
That's right.
That's a huge problem.
It's a huge problem.
Housing can be a problem. We're in a housing crisis. Yep. Well, if you're a carer on welfare and you're trying to find housing for you and
accessible
someone with
housing,
disability or you know, episodic mental health issues, it's extremely difficult.
One of the things that happened in our house, which is universal, I guess, is that the carer's payment then moved towards my daughter getting the disability pension.
Oh, yeah.
So that's fine because it's great for her to have some access to some money to buy things off Temu.
That is important, Mandy.
Has anything turned up? Have the things?
Oh yeah, 30 pins to put on her school bag, and because she had to buy 30 for like $25 or something. I was like, "What is going on?
Are they all different?
Yeah, they're all different. She's pinned them all on the bag, but you know that's wonderful. And then that's similar to her twin. She can go to Macca's and get her whatever she needs. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but that was a change.
Yeah, it's still a change. Yeah.
Is that money I used? You know, hospital car parking or all sorts of things. Yeah.
It is so expensive. All that incidental stuff like car parking
huge.
At the hospital.
Yeah, huge.
Isn't that breathtaking?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that is
so expensive.
It's so wrong.
Yeah.
They cannot have public hospitals where they outsource the parking and make money off it.
Shocking.
There's not a human I've met who goes, yeah, that's
a great idea.
That's a good idea. No, we all hate it.
But it's one of the things when people go through it and they go, oh, yeah, that's bad.
Mm.
Yeah, that is so bad because let me guess, how easy is it for either of you with your children to go to an appointment on public transport?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No.
That's right.
And in Melbourne it's a tram.
Yep.
You know, yeah.
Train. A bus.
Yep.
Yep. A light rail.
Yeah.
Or not. Probably not.
And then the whole Optus network goes down and none of the trains
are. Oh, my gosh, yesterday. Mm. Anyway, let's get back to it.
Before we finish, is there something you'd like to tell us about that was, like, really amazing about your children?
Oh, look, absolutely. They were just such gorgeous people, much bigger people than me. George just had an incredible knack of EQ. Like he would say to somebody, like, you know, a friend of ours who was just over one day and goes, gee, I love your watch, to a guy who was nearly 60. And he goes, oh, my God, my father gave me the watch. You know, he just seemed to have that incredibly high EQ. And Jazz was just very cheeky and very funny. She did have a bit of a tiff with one of the other girls at specialist school because there was one boy that they both really liked.
A big deal.
I mean, that is
it's really big in the specialist schools. Yes.
Yes. Even when she was very small, you know, I'd say, what do you want for breakfast? And she'd say, I would like porridge and make it snappy. She used to be able to do things like a drop kick and click her fingers, and yet, you know, really, her disability was even the physio would go, I don't know how she does. I can't explain how she can do a drop kick, when, you know, she had just the worst gait and very unstable. But I took her to Auskick when she was little and somehow she mastered that.
Oh.
The finger snapping, I taught her that. But, you know, after a while, the make it snappy thing is
Doesn't she know porridge? Sometimes it's too hot, sometimes it's too cold. It's hard to get it just right.
Yeah, well, as long as it got there quickly, she was okay.
It sounds like she lit up the room.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well,
it's
thank
been so
you.
So lovely to talk to you.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you for having me.
You light up the room.
I think so you do
you
too,
can tell
Sue.
Your children would.
Of course they did. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you are doing tremendous work for our community here in Victoria. So thank you.
Yeah. We love Kerry.
Because I'm sure there's days where you just think, I don't want to go to that board meeting. But you are doing an incredible job. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So if we listen to what Sue said, numbers are important. Mm. So if you're in Carers Victoria, join them. Anywhere around Australia, there is
Victoria.
Pardon?
If you live in Victoria,
you live in Victoria, join Carers Victoria.
Yes.
And then if there's an equivalent for your state around Australia, yes, join them. You don't have to go to things. You don't have to do things. But let's get the numbers up, hey?
Yeah. And like she said, people don't listen unless there's a lot of people
yeah,
saying something.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's
yeah,
all they need. I think they just need to go, look, we've got 25,000 people in our email list or whatever.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's probably going to take you 3 minutes.
Yeah, join.
Go and do it and then go get a donut.
Yes. Thank you, Peas.
See bye. You. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.